Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrest.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
Is that the same kind of highball I make for myself during, you know, no, happy hour?
This was bought in the organic section, and it contains no sugar. Yeah, the one thing you worry about energy beverages.
Contains a lot of words around the rim.
Yeah, caffeine is in this, ginseng, B vitamins. It's unsweetened. There aren't any calories. There's no sugar. So that's not where the energy is coming from. I just worry a lot of times when you have a tall can, a tall boy like this, and it says energy, that perhaps that's not really what you're getting. You're getting
Four Loko.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that works out. Some of the words around the rim there, I thought were also seen on ED medications, but we'll see how it goes. We'll be able to tell that in about 10 minutes here on the Morning Meeting. It's Monday, time to kick off another week. Sean Seacrest, Quaid, alongside you this morning. We will talk with Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit, coming up in just about half an hour. And over the weekend, it was the Illinois GOP convention. We have a guest, a mystery guest, lined up. Someone who won't be a mystery when she joins us here on the show. But
are we playing the game, or are we just going to have her on and not tell everybody who it is and they got to guess?
No.
Did I give it away?
No.
You sure?
I'm not sure either. So we'll check in. We could just go ahead and give it away now.
Okay.
I was teasing her a bit that we'd make her a mystery guest. Laura Kent Donahue will be our guest coming up in our next segment here. As she was at the Illinois State Convention over the weekend, there were a couple of interesting moments. And we'll get her firsthand assessment of what it was like when the party called for instance, looking at redefining how it defines marriage in order to, quote, capture a younger audience. That was voted down.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some interesting moments along the way, and we'll talk to her about those coming up in just a bit here on the Morning Meeting. A couple of things going on right now, in case you missed it. The Supreme Court has said they will not consider former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich's appeal of his corruption conviction.
That doesn't mean that he's not going to keep on trying.
Do not advance to go. Do not collect $200.
Let me rearrange the words in a different order. Do you like it like this? Okay, let me put a few of the words upside down and shuffle them. How about this? It's going to keep happening.
It's going to keep happening, and precedent would be now for it, of course, to continue to be denied. So we'll see where that goes and if they do end up taking it up. The other thing that I wanted to grab real quickly this morning was actually an advertisement. So this is a little change of pace from things that we usually do. And I'm not picking on the outlet that ran this. They ran it. This is from a well-known political website in the state of Illinois.
Okay.
And it runs with the disclaimer right there in bold across it. The following is a paid advertisement.
Okay.
But it's the advertisement itself that I have a bit of an issue with. And what's been hot lately in Illinois, the two sides over the daily sports betting industry have been going at it. And this is an anti-daily sports betting outfit that has put this together. It's fairly short, so I want to kind of read it, and then we'll pick apart what they're doing. It starts with, the daily fantasy sports gambling industry is pressuring officials to pass a bailout that will actually cost taxpayers. According to the agreement that has been signed in other states, these internet gaming giants would each pay just $900,000 in state taxes while being able to afford $500 million in television ads last year alone. Okay, first of all, this is my first major problem. What someone pays in taxes has nothing to do with, or should have nothing to do with, their advertising budget. You set up a tax rate that is your corporate tax rate, And then what a company achieves outside of that isn't something that you should point at and say, they're skimming the tax till. Man, they could afford that much for advertising. They should be paying more. You know what that is? That's communism.
From each
according to their means, to each according to their need.
Okay, now, I don't know what website you're talking about, but a lot of times these ads are positioned to look like opinion pieces or news stories surrounded by other news stories.
Right, and that was the case here. But as I said at the beginning, it had a very colorful, large font that said, the following is a paid advertisement.
Who paid for it?
Ahead of it. I'm guessing this organization, COGFA, there is no line that tells you who actually paid for the advertising on there.
Interesting.
Taxpayers, back to it, taxpayers actually have to subsidize regulating the online sports wagering world. That's not true. The Illinois Gaming Board doesn't know how much it will cost to oversee this new form of gaming. Well, you oversee it along with the other things that you're supposed to oversee.
You also, if you're government, you never put a hard number on it
because you always want
to be able to move that number.
Yeah, well, we're going to need a little more for this. The state is facing an unprecedented budget crisis. All right, I'll agree with that. Two out-of-state companies, which the Illinois Attorney General say broke the law, that's a hyperlink, I didn't have time to follow that, want you to give them a valuable internet gaming license. Well, it's only valuable if you have a product that people actually want. And in this case, they do. Let's see. Everyone, and then they list off people who believe that daily fantasy sports are actually gambling. They list comedians, retired athletes. So it's a whatever. It's people who are ideologically aligned with their movement. There's only one that actually carries any weight with me, and that is a large group of states' attorneys general. Have weighed in that this is actually gambling. They're the only one that matter out of this group of comedians and retired athletes who are also surveyed. Proponents, the ad wraps up, are telling elected officials a fantasy. Cute. But the budget crisis is real. Yes, it is. Don't make it worse. This is the truly offensive passage. Don't make it worse and pass a fantasy sports bailout that costs the state money. This comes from the supposition that all money is the state's.
Right.
And you're allowed to keep whatever pittance that they give you.
See how they flip that and called it a bailout there. Mm-hmm.
So by not taxing a business into oblivion, you're actually harming the state because by cutting down on the tax that they pay, it's less money for the state.
Or not even. Initially, I thought that this was from a smaller group, but the COGFA is not the SDR.
No. It's not the small
that we were talking
group.
With earlier this month.
No, this group is ideologically opposed to it, period.
Period. This isn't about the graduated weight, the percentage that the giants of the industry would have to pay. And if you just put a percentage on it, everybody, you know, if it's a flat tax, then who's, you know, other than you think it's too high a percentage anyway. Who's really complaining? What's fair? What's not? I mean, if it's flat, then it is what it is.
By now, I would hope that we have done enough education that you would understand the linguistic gymnastics that are attempting to be pulled off in this in this line of thought. This particular piece, again, is an advertisement. It's from the other side of the ideological aisle. Essentially, all money is the state's. Everything that we want to regulate should be regulated and overregulated. Your taxes should be based on your advertising budget, apparently. And so there shouldn't be just a tax that you pay as a business, but rather it should be something that they decide, and in this case, they want to be punitive. And because you're successful enough to pay for a half or $500 million in advertising, half a billion dollars in advertising, well, that means that the $1 million in state taxes. Well, it wasn't enough then.
This is meant to press your, outrage button. You're supposed to get upset at this. How could anybody let this go through? Has everybody lost? That's what this did. I did this kind of thing when I was in high school. I was like a sophomore and could rile, classmates up over slighted, you know, some situation where our class felt slighted or something goofy that happened during an assembly or something that I wanted. You press the button to get the response that you want. That's all that is.
I like where you took that, because that line of thinking is just sophomore when you put it into that frame. All right, coming up this morning on The Morning Meeting, Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit. In a bit, we check in with Adams County Republican President Laura Kent Donahue. She was at the Illinois Assembly, the state convention, over the weekend. We'll get her firsthand thoughts coming up next here on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Quaid, alongside you. Glad to be joined by our first guest this morning on The Morning Meeting, Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit, coming up in just about 16 minutes on The Morning Meeting guest countdown clock. Now with us is Adams County Republican Chairwoman Laura Kent Donahue, fresh off of her trip to the Illinois GOP convention this weekend. Laura, good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. Glad to be here.
First reactions from going to the state convention this weekend. Was it orderly? Was it a bit chaotic? Were there many, obviously, people have different points of view, especially in-house, in a party, as you try to map out where you're going to go. Was everything sort of professional, or were there some raw emotions?
Well, I'd say it was a little bit of both. I mean, there were people very adamant about things and expressed that when the amendment actually came up. But to be honest, we really didn't know a lot about it. Beforehand, I had been talked to on a couple occasions, but my delegation, we didn't have an opportunity to really discuss the whole thing until it came up, but we were very supportive of it, of the amendment.
Okay, which particular amendment are you talking about?
The one amendment that put it back to the 2012. We wanted to define marriage between a man and a woman.
Now, this is the lead-in that I was talking about before we brought you on. Talk a little bit about how that was received at the GOP convention. There was, according to the things that I was following, some conversation that the party should look at redefining that in order to make itself appealing to a younger generation, that it was somehow necessary to bring those potentials into the party. The party ended up overwhelmingly keeping it the way it was defined in 2012 as between one man and one woman. But the conversation in the room over that, how did that set up?
Well, they had three speakers for and three speakers against. And I think for the most part, the entire convention was hearing the arguments for the first time. And it wasn't totally clear, and I think some of the nuances, I think there were nuances within the amendment that with religion and things of that nature that I think people could have supported. But the main point was between a man and a woman, and the convention overwhelmingly supported that.
Laura Kent Donahue, our guest on The Morning Meeting this morning. When it comes time to assign the delegates that were won in the GOP primary in Illinois, were there any shenanigans there? Were you expecting anything?
Not really. That was pretty clear cut. There were, I think, about 100 applications, and I think we only have 12 delegates. So I was not on that committee. I was on the credentials committee, so I didn't hear the discussion that went on in that. But it was there was no discussion, fight or anything about the delegates on the floor at all.
Laura Kent Donahue, chairman of the Adams County Republican Party, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting, talking about the over-the-weekend state GOP convention. A number of speakers took to the podium there, as will happen in these conventions. One notable was Governor Rauner, and from the write-ups that I saw following, the one thing that stood out about his speech was that he never named Donald Trump, instead saying we're going to support the party candidate, but he did go out of his way to name Hillary Clinton as the opposition and say, look, what we have to do is keep her from the White House. People have read into this a number of ways, saying, look, he's trying to bring his party together in Illinois, and a great way to do that is to have, you know, one clearly delineated opposition that you're all kind of working against, so that this was intentional on his point. He also has had kind of a mixed bag when it comes to supporting Trump himself. So was there anything there that really stood out to you?
No, except that I think a number of us commented as we were listening that when he said that, is that why don't you endorse him then? You know what I mean? It's hard, and there were a number of people there that had their crews scarves and Cruz t-shirts and things of that nature, but when he was speaking, there was a reaction, and people stood up and held their signs for Trump and supported. There was no negativity in regard to the governor or anything like that. So, I mean, it was all very positive, to be honest. It was all very positive.
Laura Kent Donahue, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. Taking it from national to more on a state level, if everybody was kind of unified, were they kind of unified against Speaker Madigan?
Oh, yes, very much so. And they're very unified against Hillary Clinton. So it was, you know... There wasn't a whole lot of substance. The only substance that we really discussed of an issue, if you will, was the marriage amendment. So that was really the only thing we voted on as a group, besides the 12 delegates. But other than that, it was all very uniform and calm, if you will. There were a lot of, we went to a lot of training sessions and got a lot of good information within the delegation on data centers and walk door to door and things of this nature that can help us as we approach the election and how to help our local candidates and the national, you know, how we run our elections. So it was all, I think, informative.
Well, this is it's actually good because a week ago we were coming out of the Nevada Democrat state convention, which was chaotic, and I'm looking at
that was a pro wrestling event.
No, yeah, you know, and it's funny when you mention that. I wasn't thinking of it at the time I was there, but we didn't have anything like that. It was all very, very normal and very supportive of the efforts of the people that were making our candidates, the congressional candidates. We had, not candidates, but our congressional delegation. A number of them spoke, and they were excellent. I really enjoyed hearing from them, and the governor was very boisterous and dynamic in his comments. Dimitri DeMonte, who's our national committee woman, she's a very interesting lady and a very energetic woman, and her comments were very interesting. So I think, you know, we all enjoyed ourselves and got to see lots of people and people we hadn't seen and from other counties that we work with. It was a nice weekend.
Yeah, the recap that I'm looking at right now says the Illinois Republican Party held a love fest disguised as the state party's 2016 convention. That's completely different than the Nevada Democrat convention that we were talking about a week ago.
Yeah, no, there wasn't anything like that at all, and it was very a normal, typical convention.
Laura Kent Donahue, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. Before we wrap this up, LKD, I appreciate your time. Was there any talk about Illinois joining in the convention of states that other states around the nation have looked at as a chance to rein in what's seen as an out-of-control federal government and now a central planning system that's in place as opposed to what our Constitution originally called for? Was there any discussion about that that you participated in, overheard over the weekend?
No, sir. None.
Okay, very
not that there wasn't. I'm not saying that. But I don't know. I was not a part of that, or I didn't hear anything. No one discussed that with me at all. As I said, I was on the credentials, and there was some contention about some of the credentials and who could be seated and that kind of thing, but that's all I was really a part of.
Laura Kent Donahue, Adams County Republican Party Chairwoman, our guest this morning here on The Morning Meeting. Laura, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate the insights after the weekend.
I'll have to tell you, Sean, the minute you say a mystery guest and say she, I'm not a mystery anymore.
See? I told you I gave it away.
All right. That just goes to talk about your popularity. So that's
no.
that is easy one to get done here on the show. We'll have her on again very soon. Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it.
No problem, Sean. Thank you.
The Gateway Pundit, Jim Hoff, coming up next as we continue The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best.
This is Dennis Miller, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting here on Talk Radio 930 WPAP.
The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, the big sexy brain of Quaid, alongside you. And Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit, with us this morning on The Morning Meeting. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How are things working out for you this morning, Jim? It's been a busy, busy morning. Of course, news just coming out of Baltimore. I see you've got that post up at thegatewaypundit.com.
Right. They just found this police officer is not guilty in the death of Freddie Gray. He was cleared of four charges this morning. This is the second officer that they found not guilty. The first one was actually a hung jury, but this officer got let off the hook, as he should have been. This was a sham charges by the very political just state's attorney, this Marilyn Mosby, back in 2015, that caused all these riots, and it was a bunch of nonsense to begin with. And so here's the second officer was found not guilty, and that just broke in the past hour.
So is this the lighting of the fuse of more Baltimore unrest? I mean, are they battening down the hatches this morning, Jim?
You know, Fox News just reported that several people were outside the courthouse this morning and they were upset. But from their from the video they showed, it didn't look like there was very many people there. We'll see. But I can't imagine what people would think in this case when you saw the evidence. There was a report released last year that it was an accident. It wasn't intentional when this Freddie Gray died. And that's from the autopsy report. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see how people react. But at this point, it's up in the air at this point.
Jim, hopefully Tom Brokaw can get there quick enough to tell everybody to lay their guns down so there's not terrorism.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I saw this at thegatewaypundit.com. First of all, Tom Brokaw was brought in. He's still a major celebrity to give the commencement speech at the University of Mississippi. First of all, he's in SEC country down there. Laying down your guns isn't a popular sentiment in that part of the country. Certainly not as popular as it is in the liberal corridor in the Northeast. I know he has an agenda, and this is agenda-driven, but I can't believe that this fell on very receptive ears.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. And I did put up the video there mm-hmm. on the Gateway Pundit, but it's amazing. And once again, here is another of these liberal clowns giving a commencement address to the young minds of our country, telling them how they should believe and what they should do, and how they should feel about different issues. It's pretty disgusting. It looks like this year there was they had a full slate of leftists giving talks, including Barack Obama, brainwashing these little kids on the way out the door.
Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit, with us on The Morning Meeting.
Jim, I'm reminded of Thomas Sowell's book, Vision of the Anointed, and he says that the elites conceive of the plan, the elected in Washington implement and enforce the plan, and I'm paraphrasing right now, and the media sells and teaches about the planet. Isn't this just Tom Brokaw following? He's knowing his role and doing what he's supposed to do?
Absolutely. And, you know, it ties in with another story I put up this morning where we found that a White House-linked group was paid NPR $100,000 to push the Iranian nuke deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it looks like they're all in cahoots against the common man, the government, the State Department, the media, and we're just finding out about this. Of course, it probably doesn't surprise many of your listeners, but now we have concrete proof once again that the government is in cahoots with the media trying to push their agenda.
Not on NPR, Jim. I mean, not a mm-hmm. national public radio, state-funded, that is existent upon state dollars and your charitable donations. But they certainly wouldn't take government money or direction to push a government-favored deal on people, would they? I mean, this is essentially America's version of the state news service that's seen in so many other countries.
Absolutely. Great point. And, you know, the fact is, though, you and I both know they probably didn't have to pay NPR to push their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I think NPR was probably already on board. So it was just a gift handed to NPR, you know, or a bribe, if you want to call it a bribe, so that they'd continue to push, you know, what the President Obama wants them to talk about. In fact, I put up one story from this NPR article, and that was back in 2015, the NPR insisted that when Iran was given these billions of dollars, that they would help the people. They wouldn't be using the money to fund terrorism around the world, but they would actually use it at home to help the people. I mean, what nonsense. You and I and every one of your listeners knows that that was a bunch of crap from the get-go. So these people are delusional. They're making the world less safe, and you know, and they're getting paid for it with our taxpayer dollars.
$100,000 isn't much of a bribe. I mean, we bring that in each week with your appearance here on the morning meeting, so you have to go for some
right.
more real money, you know, if that's going to indeed be the case. Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit, with us this morning on the morning meeting. While Tom Brokaw is making light of terrorism by telling a Southern Culture College that owning a gun equates to terrorism or brings on the opportunity for terrorism, there is, in fact, real terrorism going on in the world, Jim. You've got the latest article up on what the investigation stands at on the Egypt Air Flight 804 that went down.
Right. There's a few new details that have come out. One was, and we heard this at the end of last week, that they suspected a fire. Some fire alarms were going off on the plane before it crashed. My brother spoke with a pilot in actually in Hong Kong, but this is a longtime pilot, who said that when this plane nosedived, it was going down at such a, you know, fast speed that something happened, and this pilot suspected that there was a bomb on board. But now we find out that they're saying an internal explosion could have happened up near the cockpit. In fact, they're even saying, one expert says that it could have blown out the pilot's windows. So, you know, that certainly would bring the plane down. So that's one new piece of evidence in this crash. We still don't know exactly what happened. Another thing that's interesting, this happened actually a couple years ago, but during the turmoil in Egypt, somebody wrote graffiti on the plane that says that said, we will bring this plane down. That was two years ago. But it is interesting that this plane ended up, you know, ending up in the Mediterranean after several flights. And so it was crashed or whatever happened. But there was an ominous sign written on the plane a couple years ago.
So it was like graffiti tagged? You know, like,
right.
I guess like gangs would do?
Isn't that interesting? And, you know, it doesn't give me much confidence in the Egyptian, you know, air security if people can run out and tag the planes with graffiti. You know, if they can get that close to the plane, they certainly could be, you know, doing other things to it if they're able to write spray paint on their planes.
Yeah, and if that happened a couple of years ago, you think at some point in time you take a little bit of time to go back and touch that up and kind of paint over it.
Sure, or at least put up like a beware of dog sign at the airfield or something to try and keep some people out of there if they're just running around willy-nilly. Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit, with us this morning on the morning meeting. Jim, Illinois just had their state GOP convention over the weekend, so we've got our minds, as usual, on many things politics. Up at thegatewaypundit.com, you've got an article up about a name that it'll ring a memory bell for many, but we'll help fill in the gap. Michelle Fields is back on the political campaign trail covering Donald Trump again. We've seen so many, so many news media outlets that operate from the left announce these Trump investigatory teams, from the New York Times saying they've got a team of 20 investigating the Trump campaign, to now Fields is once again going to get back into this game. This time it looks like she's getting in at the behest at the Huffington Post. This is the sort of meta of the day to announce how you're going to be looking into the Trump presidency campaign, and yet no one seems to have any inkling that they're going to do even one whit of due diligence or research on Hillary Clinton.
Isn't that something? So here Michelle Fields, you know, she had that big hoax against Corey Lewandowski. She said she was assaulted. Then we all saw the video, and this guy barely touched her. He brushed up against her during a media scrum after a victory speech by Donald Trump. Of course, the charges were thrown out of court. They were ridiculous. A lot of people, and some who we know, though, lined up with Michelle Fields as she embarrassed herself and embarrassed them with this, this slanderous charge against Donald Trump's campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski. So she leaves Breitbart because she's upset that they wouldn't defend her, they rightfully so, they didn't, you know. Now she's with the Huffington Post. You know what's interesting about this, though, is the Huffington Post, if you recall, about 9 months, a year ago, they said, we're not going to cover Donald Trump in the news section. We're only going to put him in the entertainment section of our website. Well, that didn't work out too well for him, considering he's the GOP nominee now. Of course, they were one of the groups that thought that Trump wouldn't last more than a couple of weeks. Here he is, the nominee, and coincidentally, ahead of Hillary Clinton in the latest polls. So, so they hire Michelle Fields, and she has the gall to say that she's going to be covering the Trump campaign. That's her responsibility now. As Dan Reel, who writes for the Breitbart.com, reported this weekend, that wasn't even her responsibility when she was with Breitbart. So now she's going to cover it for the Huffington Post. And I wrote Corey Lewandowski last night. I wish he would have got back with me. But I asked him if there's any chance in hell that they're going to let this woman into any event that they have, considering her history of slanderous lies against the campaign.
Yeah, I can see they have the picture. If you see this woman, don't let her into the facility, despite the fact that she may have a media badge on.
Right, and they have that, certainly in private gatherings, they can do that. And I know they've turned people away before. They turned Des Moines Register reporters away at one point after, you know, some nasty article they wrote about Trump. Trump can do this, especially if it's at, you know, one of his golf courses, you know, or country clubs, or at the Trump Towers. They certainly can, let people in and escort people out as they choose, since it's a private establishment. But, if I saw her and I was a Trump campaign employee, I would run, or else I'd run and get the cops and get her out of there, because this woman is dangerous. You know, she tried to flip a whole election off some bogus charge that she was assaulted, which was just a sham. She ought to be ashamed of herself. Huffington Post ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit. Jim, you mentioned briefly about the polls. You called this weeks ago. Donald Trump now ahead in some, or within the margin of error, pretty much on every poll now, with Hillary Clinton. I think the Real Clear Politics average has him up some media people, I don't know that they're distraught about it, but wondering why Trump is ahead. Of course, this has been an ongoing thing since last summer. They're trying to figure out why. The interesting thing I thought that I don't know that a lot of people are talking about is the Real Clear Politics has, when it's Bernie and Trump head-to-head, they have Bernie ahead.
Right, isn't that something? And, of course, we all know, you know, Bernie's got some pretty positive coverage so far. Even Hillary Clinton, you know, said that. There hasn't been one nasty attack ad on Bernie because nobody takes him seriously.
Yeah.
You know, he's a crazy old socialist. But, you know, Trump had a fantastic month. After he won the nomination and Ted Cruz dropped out, of course, the Republican elites were like, oh, this is the end of the party. We'll never recover from this. He's going to lose in a landslide. And within 1 month, he's gained 11 points on Hillary Clinton, and now he's ahead of her in several polls and leads her in the national averages. So, you know, and it's just starting. He hasn't really laid into her much at all. So I think Democrats are in horrible shape right now. We'll see how they recover from this, but Hillary's not a good candidate. She's clumsy. She's slow. She's not creative, as Donald Trump pointed out. She's crooked, as Donald Trump has pointed out. Democrats are in a horrible place right now.
It'll be interesting going into both conventions this year. Here we thought it would just be potential chaos or generate more interesting lines on the GOP side of the aisle. It looks like they might not even be the favorite for chaos as we head into
the
national convention.
Not at all.
Very soon on the upcoming radar. Jim Hoff, the Gateway Pundit, with us this morning on the morning meeting. Jim, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, bud.
Thanks, Seth. Good week.
As always, you can see him at thegatewaypundit.com. All right, we'll wrap it up. Coming up next on the morning meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
The morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Squade alongside you. If you missed any of it, go back and get the podcast after we're done here this morning. WTAD.com, always the five most recent podcasts and the show history available wherever you get your podcast. Controversial regulation, Quade, on the agenda. They want to update, being the Food and Drug Administration, want to update the nutrition facts label that you see on your food when you go to the grocery store.
Yeah, I heard about this.
They want to bring this in line with Michelle Obama, the First Lady's Let's Move push, as well. Basically, it's the whole nutrition. She was in charge of overseeing the SNAP program overhaul and all these things. But now science has come out and said those new labels she wants, they're not based on science.
Again, what does science have to do with
this? Yes, yes. Well, come on. This is a political agenda. Science, shut up. Nobody wants to hear from you in the White House right now. Changes to the nutrition facts label, which the First Lady will announce Friday when she speaks at the Partnership for a Healthier America, would require food manufacturers to list added sugars, which scientists say lacks scientific rigor. That's what they use in the science community to basically say, do you know what the hell you're talking about? The label will also cost companies about $750 million just to fall in line with the mandated update. And the net social cost, not sure what went into that figure, $1.5 billion along the way. Ms. Obama has identified that the charge about the sugars not being important as the most important of all.
Of course. Well, perception is reality, even though it's not. Perception is kind of projection when you get right down to it. However, when you started this story, my mind took off in a different direction, racing with ideas, and maybe they're 8 steps ahead of me. They probably are. Why not just condense this down to a few government-designed emojis? So you're taking up less space.
I agree.
On the label.
I agree. This is what we were supposed to have with what, the Terror Watch system to where it was a number or a color or an emoji or something, and then they scrapped it. This was also supposed to be the hospital review system that was going to be put in place. That was a hospital rating based on the traditional 1 to 5 stars. The hospital industry threw around enough weight to get that scrapped because they don't want an easily grokkable system for people to say, oh, overall, they're high quality or maybe middle of the road. And I understand some of their concerns where they say, well, we specialize in this area or that area. How's that going to be reflected? It's just a general grokkable system so that in more urban areas where you have more competition, more hospitals, you don't have to look too far. I mean, there's literally, I think, a hospital next to every bar in St. Louis. So it's just a situation that gives you easily grokkable information. The complaint on the other side was, well, it doesn't give them the right information. So anyway, anytime there's a scale that's supposed to make something easy for you, somebody just poo-poos it.
Well, but my point being, the science doesn't have anything to do with this. What we need is
emojis
that let you know whether this is government approved or whatever department or regulator approved.
You could just do like a Michelle Obama face, and if she's frowning, then it's Michelle says bad for you.
She's her own emoji?
Yeah, and then a smiley face. Michelle says good for you. And just plaster that on. I mean, that's what she's essentially angling for.
And at the end of the day, that this would be, you could, when you boil it down, if you'll allow the pun, you're going to get just crony capitalism.
Exactly, because now, after the thin
Sorry, cronyism.
Veneer, yeah, after the thin veneer of helpfulness / righteousness / government overreach and intervention into your life. Now the way you're going to get smiley Michelle is just by, what, making a donation?
Whatever, yes, whatever.
By smiley Michelle.
Friend of the government. Happy emoji.
All right. Major League Baseball has reportedly agreed to change the strike zone next year, Quaid. As a former pitcher, does this outrage you? They want to move it from below the hollow of the knee to above the kneecap for the bottom end of the strike zone.
Not really. As a pitcher, that's not really cool. But in all honesty, the strike zone has been defined since the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just call a strike a strike? Why is this controversial?
Yeah, that's what they're bringing up right now. The Rules Committee going to hear this in the offseason. Also,
if you call the high strike, too, at least you're expanding the zone.
Right.
You got enough area to throw the ball into that you can make a difference. It doesn't have to. I understand below the kneecap induces more ground balls, but not enough time.
All right. Pitcher's also going to be allowed to get lazier. You'll just say, we want to walk that guy instead of throwing four outside. And an intentional walk allowed to happen. All right, we're going to intentionally rest for 23 hours. Get back to you tomorrow. Ben Yount and more coming up tomorrow on the Morning Meeting.
Morning Meeting adjourned. Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.